Kaya FM 95.9. Sidebar every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
It is a minute after 7 o'clock and a very good evening to you. You are listening to Kaya FM 95.9. This is the home of the Afropolitan and you are listening to Sidebar with Cindy Van Sale. Normally it would be with Dr. Cindy Van Sale, but today is different as it has been for the past couple of days. My name is Sotomayor and I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy, who's still a bit under the weather, but she will be back with us hopefully as soon as is possible. So today is a Wednesday and today, I suppose the biggest thing that's happened today, we've been talking about vaccines. We've been talking about the first vaccines that have been taking place in Khayelitsha, as well as the President of the Republic getting his vaccination. So that ties in very nicely with the conversation that we're having this evening. We're talking about science, a man of science, that is. We're going to be talking to Sandile Cele, and you might be wondering why that name might sound familiar to you. I will tell you all about it in a second.
Because a conversation a day is exactly what the doctor ordered. Sidebar with Cindy. Every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Now it is 2 minutes after 7, and like I said earlier on, you're listening to the home of the Afropolitan and you are listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy, and I am Sotomayor standing in for Dr. Cindy Van Sale. And I did say earlier on that we're talking to Sandile Cele, who is, I suppose, a man of science, and his name might sound very familiar because I read the story about this amazing young man a couple of weeks ago in the newspaper, but I've seen him every now and then in other media spheres. I've seen people talking about him on Twitter as well and talking about the great and amazing work that he's done. He is a scientist. He is a PhD student as well. And he is a part of a team that basically managed to grow the COVID-19 virus in a lab. And why this is very important is because it allowed them to at least research the virus, understand the virus a bit more, and understand how the new variant responds to antibodies, especially from the first strain of COVID-19. So like I said, you know, this conversation segues very nicely into what is happening today in terms of the vaccines that have been taking place. Without further ado, he joins us now on the line. Sandile, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to finally speak to you because we had to convince you and cajole you and like, please. So I'm very, very, very happy that you finally agreed to speak to us. It's very lovely to speak to you. And I'm especially, especially excited because I'm excited about the work that you've done. I want to know how you did it. What made you want to do it? You know, talking about... Before we talk about who you are, because I'm sure everybody wants to know about who you are, you know, how you came to be a scientist, to be somebody that works with science. Let's talk a little bit about what you did over the December period when many people were like resting and going on holiday, or at least trying to go on holiday and trying to fight over the liquor and what's happening with the liquor. You grew the COVID-19 virus in a lab. Can you just tell us a little bit about that? How did you grow the virus, number one?
Once again, thank you for having me. It's not that I didn't want to come and talk to you guys. I had a bit of a very busy week, so...
Yeah, I can understand.
I'm here now.
Listen, I can totally understand. Okay, with everything that's going on in the world, I can understand how you can have a busy day every day. So how did you grow the virus?
How do they grow the virus?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in the most basic terms, because you're speaking to somebody who doesn't really understand science, in the most basic terms, how did you grow the virus? Yeah.
Firstly, I would like to point out that it's not that you started doing this work around December when the second wave came. It's something that we've been doing for a couple of months now. I think when the first case of corona was reported here in SA, it was around March, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think you're correct, yeah.
Yeah, my supervisor, or rather my mentor, Dr. Alex Gall, called us in for a meeting and said we needed to stop what we were doing because we were working on HIV and TB and all that stuff. Mm. So he said we needed to stop that and then see how we can then help in terms of studying corona and see what we can do as a lab.
Okay.
So from there, we started getting we got a study going where we were getting samples from hospitals around Durban. Mm. So they bring samples to us, like your blood samples where we get antibodies. They will bring your swabs, which has the actual virus. Mm. So as part of my PhD project, wants to look at then what will happen if the virus starts to evolve. What will these variants mean in terms of how the virus behaves? Mm-hmm. So, and then the second wave came while I was still like looking at other minor variants with like a few mutations. We didn't say much. But then there was this new second wave, which had so many mutations. Mm-hmm. So then I concentrated solely on this new variant.
Okay.
So how we grow it in the lab, we actually get a swab from the hospital. Mm-hmm. We bring it in a BSL-3 laboratory. Mm-hmm. This is a negative pressure lab. Like when you open the door, the air gets sucked in, so nothing goes out. It only goes in.
Okay.
So I think it's important to mention that. Because the virus, once it's in the lab, it never leaves the lab.
So it can't get out at all?
Exactly. There's no escape for the virus. Mm-hmm. We take it from the hospital and bring it in our lab. And all the experiments that we do are done inside the BSL-3.
Okay. So that's very comforting to know that it's not coming
out. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then to grow a virus, you need to get a virus in the lab, of which you got from this new variant. I think it's emerged in Eastern Cape. So mm-hmm. we couldn't get it in the hospital around Durban. Mm. But we are lucky enough to be in the same building with Prof. Tulio, who is with CRISP, who was kind enough to give us samples from Eastern Cape as he received these samples as part of a genomic surveillance.
Okay.
So when he gave us, you need to have a cell line, like cells that have receptors for the virus. Mm-hmm. So that when you put the virus onto these cells, the cells will bind to a receptor and then it gets engulfed or it gets inside the cell. Once it gets inside the cell, then the virus starts replicating and then producing even more virus. We then harvest this virus and this will be used for further studies.
Okay, so that is basically how you got the virus, how you grew the virus.
That's basically how viruses are grown. Because it's didn't just start with the SARS-CoV-2. As I've mentioned, we've mm-hmm. also been making with HIV. We're doing quite a similar thing. That's why it was easy for us to switch, to stop what we're doing in HIV and then switch to SARS-CoV, because we've been working with viruses before.
Okay. And why was it important to actually grow the virus? I mean, when you first decided on the project as a team and you decided that we are going to grow this virus, did you know what you were going to do with it? What were you going to be working on?
Well, when we started, like as you've mentioned, that we are a team, like it's a group.
Yeah.
So initially, we wanted to see if people with HIV are they more susceptible to SARS or not. Mm-hmm. But that was just a broader idea on what to do as a team. Mm-hmm. Then we sat down and we said, as part of my PhD project, as I'm in a virology lab, I should then focus on the virus itself, like do the virology, study the variants, as I've said. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is important, as you mentioned. It is the nature of the virus to mutate, like to change its gene as it multiplies.
And take new form, yeah.
Exactly. So we knew this was going to happen, so I wanted to check whether these changes that will come about, how will it affect the behavior of the virus, and also how these mutants will react to antibodies. So that's part of my PhD project.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, it is 10 minutes after 7. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You're listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Zyl. My name is Sotomayor, and I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy Van Zyl. You are listening to Sandile Gcele, who is on the other end of the line, and he's talking to us from KZN. He is a PhD student, and he is, him and his team have done some amazing work. They managed to grow the COVID-19 virus, and they've been working on it and researching it and obviously finding out all sorts of things about the new variant that has been discovered in South Africa. In fact, Sandile, if I'm not mistaken, there's many other variants in different countries, right?
Yes, there are. We have seen like emergence of viruses in other countries, but this is expected. the more if the virus is in the community circulating from a person to person, it's going to mutate. When the virus replicates, it's going to have some changes in its genes.
Okay.
And
Please carry on, you said?
Yeah. I wanted to say these changes, they happen, but some of them, they won't have that effect on the virus. Like they won't have functional changes to the virus. It's just minor changes in the gene. Uh-huh. That mean really nothing. It doesn't affect us or affect how the virus infects or responds to antibodies. But now these new variants that are coming up, they've shown that they have reduced sensitivity to antibodies, which is worrying.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to my next question, which I was going to ask. What did you find in terms of antibodies? I mean, I had COVID in December. And now, I mean, I'm just, you know, one of the biggest things for me was wondering whether or not my antibodies would protect me from the second, from this new variant. How do you know if you've had the new variant or the old variant? But what did you find? What were your results?
So once we had the virus in the lab, the very first question that we needed to answer was that those people who were infected around June with the original virus, are they then safe from being reinfected by the new variant?
Mm-hmm.
Like as you said, we were infected around December.
Mine was December, yeah. So this December that we've just come from.
You're just quite late. But we wanted to check whether those people that have recovered from the first infection, if they were safe from being reinfected.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did, since we had a blood samples which contains the antibody from a patient here in Durban which were infected during the first wave.
Mm.
And then we had the new variant. So it was quite easy for us to put these antibodies onto the new variant and see if the new variant, the antibodies actually bind to the new variant. If it does bind, it then reduces infection. If it doesn't, then if you are exposed to a new variant, you'll get
sick again. Yeah, reinfection.
Exactly. But the results that you, the question you wanted to know the results, right?
Yes.
The results that we found is that the antibodies were less effective in terms of binding to the new variant. It's not that they didn't recognize it at all,
mm-hmm.
but the binding to the new variant wasn't as good as it binded to the old virus. So mm-hmm. it was reduced there.
It was reduced. So what does that mean then? So obviously, I mean, I understand that you're saying that it obviously means that you're not completely immune now because the binding was not as good. I mean, the first time it just literally sucked it up and it was in there. Now it doesn't bind as easily. So for somebody that's listening and wondering now, just a lay explanation, does that mean that you will get reinfected but you will not get as sick? Or what does it mean? Or it will vary from person to person. What does it mean?
Thank you very much for your question. I get it a lot, and I'm glad I have a chance.
Okay.
We have to remember now, all that we do is in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a dish where you have the cells, and then you put in your viruses and your antibody. See how simple this is?
So it's controlled, the environment.
Yeah, but you it's a controlled, exactly. Yeah. And then when you get infected, like a person's body is much more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
There's much more to immunity than just antibodies. You also get your T cell activation, which also might help when you get exposed to the virus again.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do in the lab is more like a preliminary study, like to see, it gives you an idea what to expect,
mm-hmm.
but you can't really draw like big conclusions from it. But it gives you we heard that, okay, we knew this virus is something to worry about. It doesn't really get recognized by antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult to say because we've seen this reduced recognition that a person who will be exposed to a new variant, having recovered from the first wave, will get reinfected. You can't really say it from there.
So this will vary from person to person, clearly.
Exactly. To answer that question of reinfection, it's we can have like there are people who have access to hospital data, which can then pick up a person that got infected around June, mm-hmm. and then maybe a person that get infected during the second wave. Mm-hmm. What can also be done is to sequence, like to look at these two viruses to see if it's really different viruses. So if it's different virus, it means it's reinfection. Because sometimes it may happen that the virus never gets cleared from your body. For some reason, it gets reactivated.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, it is just after 7:15. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You're listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Sail. My name is Sotomayor, and I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy. And we are having a chat to Sandy Lekele, who is a scientist. He's a PhD student, and he's talking to us about COVID-19 because he's part of a team that grew the virus in a lab. And, you know, they managed to grow this virus and in order to be able to study it and find out whether or not the antibodies from the original variant work with the new variant, which is, I suppose, is been one of the biggest things that we've been dealing with, is this new variant of COVID-19. So then, Sandile, now I understand what you're saying. The new variant. Does this then mean that there could be a third variant? You know what I mean? In other words, like an unlimited number of variants. Can it continue then to mutate and mutate? Because first of all, I mean, I think for a layperson who's not like in science, I wasn't completely aware that it could mutate and we could find ourselves with a new variant. That was something that was never in my mind. We were just dealing with COVID-19, and that was that. But now you say that viruses by nature are like that. They mutate, you know, they change. Sometimes the changes are insignificant. Sometimes they are significant. Now, obviously, COVID-19 seems to be a very, potent, a virus, right? And a clever virus, if you could say that. So now, does this mean that if we've had a second variant, there is a possibility that you might have other variants? It can continue to mutate, or does the mutation stop at some point?
Well, if it could move from being an original virus, and after like 6 or 7 months, we had a second wave with a virus with so many mutations. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if...
you wouldn't be completely shocked.
We get a third wave with a virus that has even more mutations to this 501YV2.
Oh, my goodness.
But then... don't say that. But then... like you're scaring people.
I know.
If it does happen, I'm sure our genomic surveillance teams will be able to pick it up. Like when they see like increased number of cases in a particular area, mm-hmm. and they'll get those samples, and then they will then sequence and see if what kind of mutant we're dealing with. Or maybe it's just the 501YV2 infect before, or is it a new variant? Then if it's a new variant, then we'll have to get it.
We'll cross the bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, but I think if it does happen, we are in a good shape in terms of dealing with it. It won't come as a shock as the second wave came.
Okay.
But you hear people talking about the third wave, like on the news.
Yes.
So we are, we know something like that might happen. So, yeah.
So it is a possibility that something of the sort might happen.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. There's no saying that the virus has mutated, it can't mutate any further. We don't know what's going to happen next.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short.
All you can do is. try to stop it,
right? And to try to find ways to deal with it.
Exactly.
Stay okay. Sandile, I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue with this conversation, and as we'll try to get you to know you a little bit more, because I know people are very curious about the scientist, you know, this young black scientist, doing all sorts of amazing things. I mean, you know, we'd also like to talk a little bit more about you, who you are, your career, how you decided, on scientist as a career. So we're still going to be having a chat to you. If you're just joining us, it is 20 minutes after 7. You are listening to Kaya FM 95.9. And we continue the conversation with Sandile Kele, who is a young scientist that is part of the team that managed to grow COVID-19 in a lab.
Sidebar with Dr. Cindy on Kaya FM 95.9.
It is 23 minutes after 7. You are listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You are listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Zyl. And as I said earlier on, my name is Sotumea and I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy, and I'm chatting to Sandile Kele, who is a scientist. And we're talking about COVID-19. We're talking about the work that he's done on COVID-19. And of course, I mean, many of us are very curious about him as a person as well. So we'll talk about him as a person as well, a little bit of a profile on him, who he is, what he studied, how he decided on science, and this as a career. So Sandile, we were just talking before the break about the mutation and whether or not there could be a third wave. But then you have to wonder, is there an end in sight where like a virus runs its course? Is that possible, where it can't mutate any further, like it's done?
We really wish that could be the case.
Okay.
Or it does mutate and then maybe it reverses the mutations or something. But I think for a virus, if it's not a long or big virus, maybe it does mutate to a point where it can't go any further. But for our best bet for this virus we're dealing with, I think it would be to try and stop the transmission and do our part. We've seen already the numbers are going down. We're getting the vaccination started today. So I think if we keep doing what we've been doing, we're in a good shape.
So is that the best case scenario? What we can hope for is to stop the transmission, but not so much that the virus can just work itself out of the system. Or I read somewhere, and I don't think, maybe I didn't fully understand the article as well, that it could mutate, but it could get to a point where we have dealt with it enough for it to come back as, like a common cold, a common flu.
It's kind of difficult to say when that will be. So for now, we can't rely on what the virus says. Can do it. It's up to us to do our part.
Yeah, to take the bull by the horn, basically, and just get on with the situation.
If we're gonna wait for that, it might be too late for most of us.
So how effective do you think the vaccines will be? Because I know, I'm sure you've also seen people saying that they don't want to be vaccinated and all sorts of theories about vaccines and people talking about 5G. Hey, there's been a lot. There's a lot.
For this vaccine, there are clinical trials which give us, that give us numbers in terms of how effective the vaccines are. The vaccines would not be rolled out if they were not effective.
Mm-hmm. So the vaccines should...
And there is supporting data.
That the vaccines will
how
help.
How effective they are, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And even if it does come back as a mutated virus, it might be it might not be as strong if we are vaccinated.
Exactly. It might reduce deaths and hospitalization.
Okay.
Which is more what we're aiming for, to help our healthcare workers not to have so many people coming in at the same time. I think that's good enough if we can reduce the number of deaths and people going to hospital.
Okay. So, and I suppose, I know as a scientist, when you read all these things about 5G, Bill Gates, I don't even know where Bill Gates comes in. And you just wonder, what is the fear with vaccinations? Because we have been vaccinated all our lives. I mean, these anti-vaxxers is a new thing. It's more a new thing.
Everyone at some point will be vaccinated. So these talks and stuff that you see on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but anyway, Sandile, let's get into conversation more about you, because you're young. You're a scientist, a career that might be, I don't want to use the word unique, but a career that might not be. I mean, how many other black young scientists do you know?
There are plenty of us.
There's plenty of you. I'm glad to hear that. I'm actually glad to know that. I'm actually glad to know that, because when you read and you're hearing voices that are behind COVID, to hear a black voice talk about COVID as well from a point of being a scientist, from somebody who is an expert, somebody who's working on this,
I'll tell you why you don't hear so much about so many people working on COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I mentioned to you when we started about the BSL-3 laboratory.
Mm.
Exactly. Most of universities or laboratories, they don't have that kind of facility. It's a specialized lab. And I'm lucky enough to be a place at Africa Health Research Institute where we have a PSL3, because that's the only lab you can actually do so much with this virus, work with it.
So there aren't many places where you can work on this sort of virus?
Exactly. I only knew or heard of a biosafety level 3 lab when I joined CAREC, like Africa Health Research Institute, 6 years back. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know there was such a lab.
Wow. That is quite amazing. So you are, I think, number 5, the story said, of 10 kids.
That's me now.
Yes, we're talking about you now. Yes, we're talking about you now, because now people are curious, who's this person?
Yeah, there's so many of them. Let me count again. Yeah, I'm the 5th one. And then there are 10 of us in total, yeah.
Sure. And, you know, growing up...
And guys only.
10 boys!
Yes!
My goodness. Okay, clearly like a loaf of bread in that house. It's going nowhere. It doesn't take us
I don't think I've ever bought a loaf of bread in my life. And if I'm trying to buy bread, I buy 2 or 3.
And that might not even be enough.
Just a loaf. It won't go anywhere.
Yeah, and 3 might not even be enough.
Yeah. But now we're all of different ages. Some we're not at home
all at the same time.
Exactly, but you still can't go home with one bread.
Yeah,
you have to anticipate maybe someone is there as well.
So it's a very big family. So Christmas and holidays and all sorts of things, never a dull moment.
Yeah, there's so many of us at home. Yeah.
So what was it like growing up as like number 5 in like a very very big family? What was that like?
I grew up in a rural area. So it's not relevant. It's not something like it's just only my family where there were so many of us.
It wasn't unique,
My neighbor, so in the village, it's a thing. Like it's very rare to find a family where there are only 2 or 3 kids. Mm-hmm. Most of the families I know, they have like, so it was nothing different.
Mm-hmm. So it was just normal that there's so many of us at home.
Exactly. You go to your neighbor, same story. So.
And I would imagine, you know, in school, you were obviously a smart kid in school, right?
Primary school, I was smart. Because, you know, there are those, when the term ends, you get to say who came first, who came second. And
number 1, number 2, number 3. Yeah,
yeah, and they won't do like grade 1, this is number 1. They just combine the results and say who became number 1 in that entire school, or number 2, or something like that.
Yeah.
I would always make top 10. So I was quite smart. High school came.
And?
Not so much.
So high school was a bit of a...
The move. Yeah, I moved from... I did the primary school back at home. Mm-hmm. In Brede. Mm. So for high school, I moved to here and came to Durban.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the change and everything. So, because in... at home, the first language was Zulu. Mm-hmm. And then I came to Devon, now things changed.
And now you're doing English, probably.
English, and I had to adapt to that. I'm doing Afrikaans and all, so.
Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit more difficult.
Exactly. Because even my matric, I didn't do that well, but I managed to get into it.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So how did you decide on a career? How did you decide on science as a career? What was the decision making behind you? Was it that you really enjoyed science, even though things were not going that well in high school? Was it just that I really actually like science?
Actually, honest with you, like, you know, when you get to your grade 10, you have to choose whether you go to commerce or science or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, there's this thing that if you kind of smart or smart, you probably go to science. Even the teachers will encourage you to go to science.
Focus on that, yeah.
Exactly. So that's how I got into science. And then I did my grade 10, grade 11, grade 12. I remember in grade 12, I wanted to apply for medicine. but I didn't know the closing dates were around June. So I didn't apply, and then I doubt I would have gotten in the result.
In order to get into medicine?
Yeah, you did really good results. Right? Yeah.
But now here you are, you're a PhD student.
Exactly.
So,
and then I applied for biology, like biological sciences around September, and I got accepted. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to tell your parents that this is what I'm going to study, biological sciences, I'm sure it was a, you know, I would imagine it's a great moment. you're such a deep sigh.
The thing is, unfortunately, my mother passed away when I was in my grade 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it was me and my father, and my father is that kind of person, which is like... if you come with the report, did you pass? And you'd say, yes, I passed. Say, congratulations. You say, I didn't pass. We'll see you next year, you know?
Yeah.
So he asked me, what's he going to study? I was like, no, I'm going to do biological sciences. He said, great.
And that was his response. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Go. Good.
And then I did that for first day, I think. And then I learned of biomedical sciences. Since I wanted to do medicine, then I said, okay, let me go with this biomedical and get some medical studies as well. Do biology and get some medical studies.
Mm-hmm.
Then I switched my second day to biomedical sciences. I told him again, he said, great. And then, yeah, that's how I got into science.
And the rest is history. And then you just kept on and on and on and on until...
Yeah, and my marks started picking up as well, because I did that on my third year.
Mm-hmm.
Which led me to do my honors in medical microbio.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did good there as well. Yeah, I did really good there. And then I did my master's. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And now we are looking at the PhD.
Yeah, I finished my master's in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I went to do an internship with the Technology Innovation Agency. It was a one-year internship. Like I was there for like 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied at Africa Health Research Institute.
Mm.
And then I started working 2014, and that's where I am now.
Okay, well, if you just...
I've always wanted to do PhD, but yeah, I kept on postponing it, because I remember when I came for an interview at the Africa Health Research Institute, I told Dr. Alex, after maybe a year or two, after I've learned what you guys are doing here, and got comfortable, because I had not worked HIV before.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted just to get the feel of the leg and know the techniques that they do. So, yeah.
Okay.
2 years came, I postponed on this. Yeah.
And just kept them.
Exactly.
Well, Sandile, I want to ask you. I know we did say earlier on that there'll be no callers, but I think people are very excited about you. And for the same reason that I am, you know? I mean, it's always nice to have a young person who's doing amazing things, who's at the forefront of something that is very amazing. So I would like to ask you if, you know, because people want to talk to you, you know? You feel like Beyonce is here, but you can't touch her.
What happened now? I expected this. I knew this.
That I was going to ask you, you know?
Yeah.
Just so we can say hi. Hey, how are you? Are you, you know, COVID? Hey, you know, you, star you. So is it okay if we take like one or two calls of people that just want to have a chat to you?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, great stuff. So we are chatting to Sandile Qele, who is the young scientist who's part of the team that is working on COVID, and they've been working on the new variant and to see what your antibodies do in terms of the new variant. And we're taking a call now from Thabo. Thabo, thank you very much for joining us, and good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Soto.
Hi, how are you, Thabo?
Find yourself.
I'm good.
Yeah, great show.
Thank you.
Sure. I just wanted to put one or two questions to Sandile. Sandile, great work. Congratulations.
Sandile? Thank you. Okay, Thabo, your questions?
Sandile, I might have the first part of the interview. Did you sequence the new variant yourself, or did you send, or did you sequence it elsewhere, or was it done in the lab, in your lab?
Okay, give him a second to answer. Sandile? Oh, Sherbert.
Hello?
Hi, yes, Sandile, we're still here. So you got that question, Annie?
Yeah, I got that question. And okay. Thanks for that question. Prof. Tulio from CRISP, they do sequencing for us. I don't do sequencing. So we send them samples, they do the sequencing for us.
And what does that mean, Sandile, for me that's listening, and I'm not sure what you mean now when you're talking about sequencing. What does that mean?
Sequencing is looking at the genetic makeup of the virus.
Uh-huh.
Like you put your original virus, you look at how its genes are aligned, and then your variant, when it has changed, it would be different from the original one. Oh. Like looking at the genetic makeup.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just putting it broadly. It's more...
Okay. Tabo, your next question for Sandile?
Yeah. Oh, no, the next question was actually a follow-up too, but you might answer it. I wanted to find out of the new generation sequencing, which one did you use? The Roche system, the Applied Bio system? You might not be aware if it was not done in the lab. Maybe this will be a relevant question too, but I wanted to find out of the new generation sequencing platforms, which one?
Yeah, sorry.
Or the Applied Bio system.
Okay, Sandile, I'll tell you that I'm very lost right now, but you can answer Tabo on behalf of all the other scientists that understand what you are talking about.
As I said, I didn't do the sequencing myself, so I can't answer Tabo on that. But it's something that I can always ask the guys who does it for us. It's what did they use to sequence it?
Okay, thank you very much. Sandile,
Sandile, great work. But by the way, just as a coincidence, which campus are you at? Marienburg, Devon, or Devon with you?
Which campus, Sandile?
I'm in Nelson Mandela School of Medicine.
Ah, okay, sure, great. But great work.
Thank you very much. Tabo, I'm guessing you're also like in the science faculty.
I did biotechnology at Marienburg.
Okay, so I
very interesting stuff.
Yeah, I figured that definitely you must also be a man of science. Thank you very much for your call, Tabo, and thank you for your questions. Yeah.
Thanks,
Richard. Okay, great stuff. If you're just joining us, it is 20 minutes to 8 o'clock. You're listening to the home of the Afropolitan. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. We're having a chat to Sandile Cele. We're talking about science. We're talking about COVID. We're talking about the work that he's done with COVID. We're talking about the fact that, you know, him and his team have managed to recreate the COVID-19 virus in a lab. And what they've done is to check whether or not, you know, the new variant responds to antibodies, which is really great work, amazing work that he's done with his team. But we're also talking about him as well as a person. And we've just had a call from Tabo, who's also a man of science, and asked all sorts of questions that went straight over my head. But if you also have questions for him, he's a little bit open, just a little bit open to asking, taking your questions on 086-00-00959. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll still continue the conversation with Sandile Cele.
Sidebar every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Well, now we carry on with our conversation. We have been talking to Sandile Cele. We're talking to the scientist, Sandile Cele, as well as talking about the man behind the scientist, talking about his career, talking about what he's done in terms of COVID, his, you know, I suppose, aspirations, inspirations. Sandile, thank you so much for staying with us. You know, I was a big fan of the Big Bang Theory, which is basically like a group of scientists. I don't know if you get to watch any TV. When you were in that lab
I watch it, like I still am.
So I thought,
season 3 of it, I still watch season 2 and season 1 every now and then.
Oh, absolutely love it. Completely love it. So I'm sure as a scientist, you've got other scientists that you look up to, right? Or certain inspirations in your field of science. For you, who are those people? What is your biggest inspiration when it comes to science?
I have to say, I look up to my boss or my mentor, Dr. Alex Sekal.
Mm-hmm.
The dedication to the work is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, as I said, he just said to stop doing what we're doing. When the first case of COVID came in, he said, we need to get our hands into this. So that's on its own. It tells you a lot about the guy. So.
Yeah, and very much on the ball, moving with what is happening at the moment and staying current.
Exactly. And he was with me during, when I said I worked through the December holidays. And he would come in like almost every day with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To come and work with
him. Even though he wasn't in the lab, but he would be in his office and doing his stuff. And then I would get results, we'd discuss the results with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's there. Yeah.
The inspiration. So what does it mean, though? For, oh, sorry, Sandile, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, and I wanted to say I'm very happy to have him as my mentor and my supervisor.
Sure, that is, it's always special when you find somebody to mentor you that you can look up to.
Yes.
So what happens now with your work with HIV AIDS? Because I would imagine now, because HIV AIDS obviously doesn't go away suddenly because we've got COVID. What happens with that work?
No, when you put it on stop, it's not that you're not going to do it again. It's just that even in the hospitals now, like, to get studies that with HIV, like, we have a limited number of nurses, so we have to put our nurses into concentrating on COVID as well. Like, it's not that these projects, like, we're not going to go back to them. As soon as things fix it down, then we can then open this project again.
And there'll be other projects to work on as well. So what is the one thing that you want to work on? You know, I suppose as somebody that is in the science, maybe there's something that there's other viruses that you want to work on. What is like the one thing that you would, your dream project?
You know, before I started my PhD, I always told my supervisor that, like, when there's those performance appraisal things that they do at work,
yeah,
I could say I would really like to have a project of my own. Because as a lab technologist, you work with different people, like different projects and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really get into it one project that you will understand. I only told him I wanted to get a project like that. And then I registered for PhD around February.
Mm-hmm.
Then SARS case came on March. And was like, here's your chance
to do something.
Yeah, this is yours. So I was so excited, and there's so much work. I believe, like, even if it's not that grave or whatnot, there will still be work to be done in terms of the understanding the virus. So for now, I would like to get deep into this SARS-CoV-2 virus and really, really work on it.
So it's safe to say that you could possibly be working on the project of your life at the moment.
It doesn't get better than this. To be part of a pandemic, a virus that is
yeah.
Everyone. It's really, I know it's every scientist's dream to get into working in such an important work.
To be working, you know, right in the middle of a pandemic, of a virus,
like,
that
whatever result you get, it matters. It's really, I think every scientist would want to be part of such a project.
Exactly. You know, and especially a virus that is a very difficult to understand as a layperson. I think maybe as a scientist it's different, but I think as a layperson I find that I don't fully understand.
Even with that scientist, like, you always get, like, new things every day, so it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I'm part of it, and I'm in it.
Yeah, to get to understand. What would you say, what do you think are some of the myths or things that, you know, that you think are the things that we think are true about the virus but are not, the myths around the virus? Because there's so much information that's running around it. Sometimes it's hard to decipher between the real and the not real.
Can you give me, like, an example, like, then I can tell you?
You know, when the virus started, obviously they said that we talked about pangolins, then we talked about bats, then we talked about a wet market, and then I'm like, okay, where does it come from? Like, was it a pangolin, was it a bat, or what was it?
Well, everything does suggest that the circulating virus is closely related to those found in bats.
Okay.
If the evidence points to that. So, you know, people, they will just talk like, but evidence says it's more closely related to those that are found in bats.
And not the pangolin.
I would say not the pangolin. Maybe there is some sort of similarity with that that's found in pangolin.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess maybe that's why they are people sent by WHO to China to try and find those answers for us so that we all on the same page.
So that we all understand. But how does a virus jump from a bat to a human?
I don't know how that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that that the virus from the bat people have receptors that they can actually bind to. Maybe it infected that one person, mm-hmm. and then multiplied, and then he or she started like spreading it around. It's possible. I'm not saying that's how it happened.
But it's very difficult to actually see how would a virus mutate from an animal to a human, because it's not the first time, right? We've ever had a virus that that went from an animal to humans.
Yeah, maybe there are some similarities in the receptors that that particular animal has, or in the person, like a virus can cross infect, like infect a person and also infect an animal. Like as you know with HIV, that it also infects monkeys and stuff, but it also infects people. The difference is that it doesn't cause disease in monkeys.
It just stays in the body. What, it lies dormant? Does that make sense? Am I making sense?
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't stay dormant. It's just that it doesn't cause disease. Maybe what HIV does is cause the body to attack itself. Mm-hmm. Maybe it just doesn't trigger that
in monkeys.
Exactly.
And can it go back, like in terms of COVID-19? So it's now jumped from the bats. So in other words, if it's jumped from the bats to the humans, and now it's mutated in humans in the sense that there's a new a variant, can it then move back to animals to a bat? In other words, can an animal now be infected with the new variant of the virus?
I'm really not sure, but that if a human come close enough to a particular animal, they might spread it. Whether it will infect or not, that's another question I cannot answer.
Mm-hmm. So that would be something else, you know, if it did happen, it would be something else that would be a new thing to study.
Yeah, I don't think it will really happen, but as I said, let's not go there.
Yeah, and get too creative with our thoughts.
No, we are getting too far out.
And world domination of species and things that are going to come from out of that.
Then it's
going
to come back from the
best. Get
back to us. No,
it's too far a thought. Well, if you're just joining us, it is 7 minutes to 7 o'clock, nearly the end of the show. And we are talking to Sandile Cele. We're talking to the scientist, Sandile Cele. We're talking to him about the amazing work that he's done with COVID. And he continues to do some amazing work with this team, still working on figuring out COVID-19. So, Sandile, you found out, obviously, that the antibodies maybe are not as strong when it comes to the new variant. What is your next project when it comes to COVID-19? What are you working on right now?
Right now, mm-hmm. We've also written an article on that antibody work. Mm-hmm. So we sent it for publication. And then came back with minor reviews, so we had to do additional experiments. So that's what I have been busy with. But when we close that chapter, there will be more. Like, there's so much that can be done. It's more like a matter of choosing a project that will have more impact. Like, the field is wide open. We have the virus in the lab to work with. Like, we have access to some of the samples, like hospital samples. So, really, but what I can tell you is that we will be working on this. I've already started some of the work, and we will report once we get there.
So, there's still.
Tell you exactly what we've been doing and what we have found.
So, there's still loads and loads and loads of work to do. So, before we let you go, just as part of our parting shot, you know, I know for a lot of kids, when you think about, and here, I'm just being a little bit sentimental, when you think about career and stuff, and this might not be a career that might be easily accessible, especially to black kids, when you think about sciences, you know, as well, because it's the kind of thing where you need to be good, I would imagine, with maths and science and biology.
No.
Not necessarily.
Not really. You know, if I were to tell you, maths, I was never good at maths.
Really?
I think I got about 49%, or if not 48, it was below 50.
And this is somebody that was like cum laude, right?
Sorry?
I mean, what I'm saying is that when you graduated cum laude, right?
Yeah,
and maths was not
on my honors.
Yes, but maths was not one of your strongest points.
When I was doing my honors, like, it's more focused on medical microbiology and biostatistics and stuff. But it's not as like your high school maths, solving the X and Y.
But I think, you know, the biggest misconception as well is that in order to go into a career of science, you have to be good at maths. You know, if you're looking at any career in sciences, I think for a lot of kids, you know, at least for a lot of people, you assume that you have to be great at maths. You have to be getting an A in maths in order for you to.
It is recommended that to be like, you have to be good in maths or physics like that. But being good at something, it doesn't mean like you have to always get the 80 and the 90%.
Mm-hmm.
50%, 70%, 50% plus hard work. I'm telling you.
And I like that message that, you know, you don't have to beat yourself up over the fact that you got 60% in order for you to be in order for you to be good at something and have a career in something. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to get like 60%. You have to get like 100%, 90%.
No. Get your 50, get your 70, be consistent, work hard, things will fall into places.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Sandile, and good luck with the amazing work and the good work. And I hope that when you, when you find something that is amazing, we can always, hit you up and ask you what it is that you're working on. Because this is the biggest thing in the world, I think, for everyone. There's nothing.
I was about to say that I'm saving so that you guys call me again, then, so we can chat about it.
Yeah, so you can, you know, give us an update. Tell us how the vaccines are going. Are they working? Are they not working? Yeah, what have you seen in the vaccine space? You know?
No, just hit me up whenever.
Yes. Thank you so
much.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sandile. And like I said, good luck with all the amazing work that you and your team are doing.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. So that was Sandile Cele, who is a scientist and, doing some amazing, amazing work. One of the scientists in South Africa that were involved in recreating the virus COVID-19 and being able to study it and see what this new variant means in terms of the antibodies. If you have the antibodies because you've had the virus, what does it actually mean? So amazing, amazing work that him and his team have done. And that brings us to the end of the show. And of course, I will be back tomorrow, same time, same place, standing in for Dr. Cindy Van Zyl. Coming up on the Home of the Afropolitan is Michael Motsoeneng Bull. And it is open line for him today. If you've got any law questions that you'd like to ask, the number to dial is 086-000-0959. From Miso Tumea, it is goodbye.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.